90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
And now, our feature presentation.
This is Mike Wallace. You're listening to Harrison.
Live from Hollywood, it's Harrison.
With Harrison reporters stationed in every country, every capital.
News updates.
Your Harrison headlines brought to you by INN World Report.
Go Harrison News Time is 1 minute past the hour, and I'm Mercy Malik with your reality check. Leaked U.S. cables have revealed Germany and the U.S. are jointly developing secret spy satellites under the guise of a commercial program. The project, named HYROS, envisions building high-resolution observation satellites capable of spotting objects as small as 1.5 feet. According to classified cables from the U.S. Embassy in Berlin, leaked to WikiLeaks and obtained by the Norwegian daily Aftenposten, the satellites will be able to take infrared images at night and transmit images back to Earth much faster than current satellites. However, due to the controversial nature of the program, U.S. and German officials decided it should be presented as a commercially run environmental project.
Yep. Well, they're watching the environment.
That's good PR.
All of it.
The cable showed in reality it was, quote, under the total control, end quote, of BND, the German intelligence service, and the German Aerospace Center. The U.S. embassy cable showed that some countries, especially France, tried to stop the project by every means possible. It's 2 minutes past the hour. Members of Afghan President Hamid Karzai's High Peace Council will hold talks this week with Pakistani leaders in the latest attempt to resolve the drawn-out and costly Afghanistan war. Pakistan, long blamed for stoking the insurgency in Afghanistan to thwart its rival India, is seen as an important U.S. and NATO ally as they battle a growing insurgency. President Karzai's spokesperson said the peace delegation wanted to seek help from Pakistan and keep its leaders abreast of developments, adding, quote, "This trip is not about meeting members of the Taliban," end quote. The momentum for talks grew last year after media stories incorrectly said senior Taliban leaders had met Karzai's government. Karzai's peace plan includes reintegrating Taliban foot soldiers and finding asylum in third countries for irreconcilable leaders. U.S. and NATO leaders say talks will not be possible unless militants renounce the insurgency. The Taliban have said there will be no talks until all foreign troops have left Afghanistan.
Wait. Militants renounce insurgency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do the militants think that there's an insurgency against them?
Well, by definition, the militants are insurging. That's kind of who they are.
Okay.
Insurging? So, yeah. Is that a word?
They're insurging.
That's good. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an active verb.
Yeah,
it is good. It is good.
And a gerund.
Yes.
Yes. It's 3 minutes past the hour. There's your time check. Finally, the internet has been abuzz with conspiracy theories about secret government testing after thousands of birds have rained from the sky in the U.S. The mystery deepens today after hundreds more birds plunged to their deaths in different parts of the country. Scientists said New Year's Eve fireworks might have been to blame for the 3,000 blackbirds that died in a small town in Arkansas. But on Monday, 500
that
more
fly
birds...
fly at night only.
They, right.
Well, they were frightened by the fireworks and then they ran into each other.
Because fireworks occurred only this year.
That's right.
Never happened before.
And anywhere
in the
else on Earth.
Of the world, right.
Yeah. Yes.
On Monday, 500 more birds plummeted to the ground in Louisiana and dozens more died in Kentucky. Presumably no fireworks on Monday. And just 100 miles from the Arkansas bird kill, up to 100,000 dead and dying fish washed ashore. Officials say the thousands of blackbirds that plummeted to their deaths in front of New Year's revelers in Arkansas, Happy New Year, may have been killed as a result of being startled by fireworks. However, Game and Fish Commission spokesperson Keith Stevens said, quote, "They died from massive trauma." End quote.
And Sweden, too. I believe there was a birds were falling out of the sky in Sweden.
Scandinavian,
over the last day or so.
Right?
There's,
socialists.
As a side note, there's a lot of stuff connected to this or supposedly connected to this that I really want to report on, but I haven't been able to substantiate it yet, so I decided to wait. I think there's some more really interesting stuff.
That's never stopped us before. Now all of a sudden...
I'm sorry.
What?
I have a different standard.
Oh, I see. Okay.
For Go Harrison on KPFK 90.7, this has been Mercy Malik with your reality check.
For details on all these stories and more, go to innworldreport.net.
GoHarrison.com.
What's new about Tiger Woods?
Michael Jackson.
Elvis Presley.
O.J. Simpson.
Abandoned base.
Porter.
Harrison. Talk show. Random. Political. Outrageous.
Philosophical.
Analytical.
Passionate.
Hidden.
Sunsets.
Roadkill cooking tips.
Open-minded.
Swordsman.
Bent.
Resolute.
Chocolate.
Bushwhacker.
Belt buckles.
Investigative.
Companion.
Fearless.
Call in.
Piercing the cloud of mainstream entertainment.
Live from Hollywood, it's Harrison.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. Harris with you, your new best friend, endlessly distorting, because that's how we like our audio here. When in doubt, triple it out. That's what I say. If one is good, 85 is better. Now, that was not a critique to you, sir. It was just that there's just no limiting on this microphone.
And you're distorting the audio, not the news.
No, it's just,
or the content.
It's me. Other people, when both of you talk,
yeah,
it doesn't distort, but I'm loud.
You are.
I am a loud person.
That's
I cannot help
mouth.
It.
That's what you are.
What
I beg.
Sorry.
You may be right.
What did he call you?
A loud mouth.
Loud mouth. Jeez. That's a nice way to open the show.
Way
to go,
else
Jeff.
How is one loud besides through their mouth?
Well, thank you. See? Thank you. For helping. Yeah. See, Mercy Malik, my publicist.
Thank
well,
you.
This
happy
show is off to a huge start.
It's huge, huge like the gavel, by the way, that Nancy Pelosi handed over to John Boehner today. And we're going to talk today, and I want to also welcome Brad Friedman. This is our Muckraking Wednesdays, Investigative Wednesdays. Brad, always a treat to have you, and Happy New Year to you.
Good, thank you. Happy New Year to you. But you know what? Now I can only think about that unsubstantiated information that Mercy wouldn't tell us about the birds.
We are going to explore that. And thank you, Mercy, by the way, for holding up that standard and not getting right into, you know, chemtrails and you know,
to,
dog
now
scumber.
Now that we've said that it's unsubstantiated, can't you give us a hint as to what it is?
I was obsessing over this for literally 3 hours last night, searching and Googling and reading.
Were those analog or digital hours?
There's a certain, those were actual clock hours.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, if you measured them in a sort of like cosmic sense of intensity, they would be much more lengthy.
Exactly.
Yeah, but there's a lot of speculation that a certain
Mossad. It was Mossad again, wasn't it? I knew it.
I'm sure someone thinks that. But no, there was a very curious death of a rather high-ranking kind of political figure that happened over New Year's, and a lot of people
Bush Reagan figure, former John Wheeler.
Yes. Well, I'm trying not to, you know, I want.
Well, but that part,
well, that's true. He actually did die.
That's confirmed.
And it's very
suspicious. Found in a landfill.
Right, but
what
a lot of people are speculating.
Birds,
that's what I'm waiting to find.
Well, go ahead, Mercy.
No, you go ahead.
Well, you see, when people die of old age or unknown things.
Yeah.
Much as if you remember reading Edgar Allan Poe. Remember reading The Raven?
Uh-huh.
The birds will fly around, particularly blackbirds and ravens, flap, flap, flap. And they could become so exhausted by flying in mass, 2,000. Because when a Republican dies, the universe looks down.
Now he's just
down,
making stuff
I know,
up,
I didn't
isn't
see
it?
The universe
coming.
Looks down
nothing to
with,
do with what you
enormous
were
depression. And so nature responds en masse. And these birds simply tuckered themselves out and then went flap, flap, flap onto the soil, including they did this in Scandinavia, in Louisiana, and many other states yet to come as they have these personal avian homages.
But what does that have to do with John Wheeler
because
dying?
He worked for a company that, or he, quote, was employed as a consultant for a company that specializes in aerial spraying.
As that one word I said
so this
earlier,
the contrail thing you're talking about.
Spraying of various substances, experimentation conducted by various governments. And that part is true.
Well, we know that NASA has published reports on the using aluminum oxide in the air to follow air currents is the official
story.
Right,
so all of these things are true, are substantiated, you know.
On their own.
On their own. It's just the potential connection that I don't really want to use in the newscast.
We'll get more. And thank you, Mercy.
We're not in the news.
You developed that, and Monday we'll hear more.
Right.
It is 10 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you. You're listening to Go Harrison on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Central California. Visited by Brad Friedman. It is our Muckwaking Wednesdays. We've got, of course, Mercy Malik, news directress. We have G off with a G on traffic, and D'Angelo with a D and an apostrophe on audio. Well, let's take a look today, and we're going to be coming up. Brad's got some amazing audio, and you're going to be talking to
David Dayan, famous, the awesome blogger D-Day from Fire Dog Lake. He will be joining us after the bottom of the hour to talk about the new House and Senate rules, as this is the first day of the 112th Congress.
Right. So
we're going to be talking about that, but also in a bit we'll be talking about something else that is happening today in Congress, in the U.S. House, that I believe is remarkable, and that's what goes back to this amazing audio from 1980. We're going to connect
awesome.
A bunch of dots.
Awesome, awesome. And as you know, today John Boehner was sworn in, and Nancy Pelosi handed him a gavel. Now, it is tradition, as it has always been for the last, 53 sessions of Congress, for the outgoing speaker to hand the incoming speaker a new gavel. But you'll note, and while everyone giggled and tittered on TV and ha ha ha, what a huge gavel, I think it's very noteworthy because this gavel was like out of a cartoon. It was more of a what do you call those?
A mallet, like a cricket mallet.
Well, yeah, like a big cricket mallet.
Yeah.
More like, not even polo. I mean, this thing is massive, right?
Yeah.
So it is a political statement because she points out, and we're going to hear the audio here as she hands it over, and it's all very kiss-kiss and lovey-lovey. But what she's saying is that this guy wields a heavy mallet. That means that every time he cracks that thing on TV, you're going to see a cartoon-sized mallet, which is going to take away a certain amount of credibility and be very scary to people visually. My opinion. But take a look at this thing with your head and your ears here and your imagination. Imagine a mallet. Instead of a gavel, normal sized, imagine it 5 times the normal size so that it looks like a club or a, what are those things that you use on an anvil.
A sledgehammer.
So let's take a listen here. This is Nancy Pelosi handing over this club to the new caveman in charge.
I now pass this gavel, which is larger than most gavels here, but the gavel of choice of Mr. Speaker Boehner. I now pass this. I now pass this gavel and the sacred trust that goes with it to the new speaker. God bless you, Speaker Boehner.
Yippee-ki-yay. So I am very grateful because the visuals on this will have a lot more editorial impact than any pundit can possibly muster.
Except I don't know that. I think that was the symbolic sledgehammer. I don't think that they'll actually be using that giant hammer to gavel in the house.
Maybe.
I wish that they would.
Well, maybe.
And I would add to that, speaking of cartoon day, Daryl Issa, is coming in as the new head of the Oversight Commission. I've been sort of going back and forth.
But hold on for the gavel thing for a minute.
All right.
He may end up using it because hubris is part of his issue.
Yeah.
And it would be the sort of thing that his personal ego would want to be seen holding an outsized mallet.
Mm. Yeah.
So just know that the top Yahoo photo right now is this outsized gavel. Not talking about the symbolism that we're looking at from this angle, but just ha-ha, giggle, isn't it funny? But just know now that everyone sees this guy with having an abnormally large gavel. Not male prowess, but clearly, sort of out of control. And that was, I think, her political statement. For the guy, after she passed hundreds of bills, and, this guy got in the way and impeded all of this legislation. So it really, I think, is a powerful political statement.
Well, it's a powerful cartoon, and that's by and large, I think, the way the GOP is going to be serving here. And on that note, as I started to say, on Twitter yesterday, I started going back and forth with Daryl Issa, who is the congressman from the 49th District in California. He's going to be the head of the Oversight Committee, and he's been making a lot of noise. And I went to his and you can do this, go to his Twitter account, which is Daryl Issa, D-A-R-R-E-L-L-I-S-S-A. I-S-S-A. He's got a picture of the Capitol Dome, and then in front of it, he's got a stick figure with a great big huge policeman's hat on. And you look at this thing and you go,
is this guy five? I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like a cartoon, this sick man. And so I put out on the Twitters yesterday, and you can follow me there at the Brad Blog. I put out an offer to him, $100 if he wears that great big policeman hat for the first day of his oversight commission for the entirety of the hearing, because his new slogan is watchdog, congressional watchdog. Really, he's the capital cop, is the way I think he sees himself. It is so cartoonish and so silly that you think this is seriously the guy who is going to be the head of the oversight commission?
Yeah.
So let's see if he wears that big funny hat.
Well, only 100?
100. Well, I said 100. That's all I can.
All right, I'm going
to
match it.
I said, to the charity of his choice, someone jumped in on Twitter and
charity.
Said, I'll make that
Wait,
200.
Did you say charity the in the charity? Same sentence as Daryl Issa?
Whichever charity he chooses, I will happily give $100 as long
if
as he wears
chooses
that
a, if he has a charity, that's another 100 bucks I'll throw
well, there
in.
You go. Well, you're in on that. Too. All he's got to do is wear this incredibly ridiculous hat for the entirety of the first oversight commission here.
I love it. I love it. Let's take a listen now that and talking about Daryl Issa, talking about the plan, and it's always interesting to observe what is the plot of the play. As you know, just in the last number of days, the GOP got together as they're trying to look for a new chairman of the Republican Party, Michael Steele, being double plus unpopular these days, but he, of course, is up for being readministered as the head, along with several others. And this wonderful burlesque, but remember, this is real to these guys. So it wasn't done for your or my entertainment. It was done as their truth-telling. In their debate, they got together, and they were asked, for instance, would you defund Planned Parenthood? Would you go for a Republican loyalty oath, like the 1950s, where you actually write into the Republican Party manifesto that one has to be loyal to the party itself? And do you love Sarah Palin and think she's going to end up being nominated for president? All of this chillingly Orwellian and Huxleyan in its wonderful audio adventure. Let's take a listen. Here they are. Responding, that would be number 8, my friend. The GOP chairman candidates debate, where they're asked, would you do the following? And they're all endlessly in full and total agreement.
Do you support completely defunding Planned Parenthood? And what?
Absolutely.
Yes.
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 Do you support the adoption of this party unity pledge into the rules of the Republican Party? Maria.
Yes.
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 Loyalty oath.
Yes.
Can Sarah Palin win a general election?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry.
Wow.
Yes.
Of course.
All right. Now, moving on, we get to the most important issue. This is the ultimate qualification of what GOP leadership is in 2011 in the United States of America. And imagine Thomas Jefferson sitting in on this, and imagine what he would say hearing this answer. The big, most important question of all is, how many guns do you own?
Naturally.
None.
Five.
I may surprise y'all, but we just got a new gun safe for Christmas, and I think there are about 16 in there. Everything from pistols and a Glock to shotguns, rifles.
Well,
heavy applause on that.
That's a treat and a delight for me. She sure does. Ding, ding, ding. 19 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you. You're listening to Go Harrison on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and a 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Central California. And don't forget, you can join us on Facebook anytime by going to Carrie Harrison, C-A-R-Y Harrison, or Go Harrison, keyword. Same thing on Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, the whole Soup Cat and Pizzas, archives, audio, all of it available either through iTunes or through GoHarrison.com or KPFK.org. We will definitely take a couple of calls here and there intermittently. I see all the lines are lighting up, so we're not ignoring you. We're just sort of setting the stage here for what's going on and trying to explain it a little bit. And your feedback always, always eagerly invited here. We're talking to Brad Friedman. This is our Muckraking Wednesday. We are talking to Mercy Malik, who is still working on dead birds. We have Geoff with a G. And Geoff, you're Mr. Traffic at the moment, because I can see you holding your policeman's hat, trying to direct the colliding traffic as it is. With Jeff Thomas!
Harrison. Completely unsponsored common sense commuter traffic.
What? I can make it up if you don't have a traffic report.
Right. Or we could turn on his mic.
Do you know that your mic is not on?
Apparently the streets are clear.
Wait, he's talking. He's talking.
He's still talking. Can't hear a word you're saying, Jeff.
Hello?
Oh, there you go. There he is.
Do you see that there's this thing, this metal thing in front of you? You talk into it.
Okay, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I was trying to talk into my shoe. Just, I always get confused. You guys know I'm the town idiot here.
But an attractive one.
Traffic from Maxwell Smarts today.
or as G corrected me, the village idiot, you stupid. All right, let's try this again. It is 21 minutes past the hour. This is your Go Harrison live and local traffic report on KPFK. There's a SIG alert on the 5 South past Rexford. That's in Mission Hills. Crews are working to clean up the accident in the two slow lanes. The SIG alert should be lifted in about 20 minutes. The 101 South is busy drive from Woodman clear down to the 110 interchange. And in Highland Park on the 110 South, there's an accident at Avenue 60. There's no injuries there, but it is going to jam up your drive into South Pasadena. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, keyword Go Harrison. For Harrison, I'm Jeffrey Thomas on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Hi, this is Rick Allen
and Doran Behrens
for Digital Village, heard every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles
and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County
and streaming worldwide at kpfk.org.
Being the highly intelligent and politically astute listeners that you are, we're sure that you're wondering,
what reason do I have to be up and awake at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning?
Well, you don't. You can listen anytime via the KPFK audio archive.
But no matter when you listen, you'll be reminded that over the last 12 years, Digital Village has been among, if not the first broadcasts, to bring you news and interviews with those involved in file sharing,
fair use and copyrights,
e-voting fraud,
net spying and the loss of privacy,
grassroots journalism and blogging,
nanotech and the green revolution,
net neutrality,
open source,
online security,
video games,
social networks and user-generated content,
and interviews with such luminaries as Howard Rheingold,
Stuart Brand,
and Apple co-founder
Steve Wozniak. You can hear all that and much more on Digital Village Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. right here at KPFK.
Thanks for listening. I'm Doran Behren.
I'm Rick Allen, and we'll see you online.
Funding for today's program is provided in part by the Steamy Paris Hilton Sex Video. The Steamy Paris Hilton Sex Video. Keeping America warm during these frigid winter months.
23 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you, your new best friend. You are listening to Go Harrison on KPFK 90.7 FM. Los Angeles 93.7 FM. In San Diego 98.7. In Santa Barbara 99.5. Central California. Visited by Brad Friedman. This is, of course, our Muckraking Wednesdays. And, Brad, you've got some killer stuff here.
Well, we got a couple of things that I want to hit here. And we're going to be joined by David Dayan at the bottom of the hour from Fire Dog Lake to talk about the new proposed, filibuster reform in the Senate. We'll see. It's not really filibuster reform, but there are some changes to it. It's proposed. We're going to see what happens. It can only happen on the first day of Congress, which
is a long day now.
Well, yeah, it's really bizarre. Hopefully he can explain this to us, because you would think today is the first day, but it's both today and
the next couple of weeks.
January 24th.
I like it.
Somehow.
I don't really know.
Only in the Senate does that work.
So only the Republicans.
Hopefully he can explain that to us.
They're cloning that thing that Bush hated so much.
He will join us to do that at the bottom of the hour, but it was something I wanted to hit here. You were talking about this debate on Monday between the GOP chair, chair people who were vying for that role, including Michael Steele and four others who are trying to take this job. And yeah, of course, some of the audio you played about them all having guns or not, or you know, all wanting to do the same
important
thing.
Stuff.
Yeah, the important stuff that we understand. But here's something that's actually a little bit more insidious that I want to draw your attention to, because it has to do also with a new guy in the House. And I'm going to tell you about this new guy in the House, and it's remarkable that he is coming to the House as opposed to going to jail. But I'll hit that in a second. So one of the things he brought up, you know, I talk about election fraud at bradblog.com all the time, and the Republicans who are out there trying to create this specter of voter fraud, massive Democratic voter fraud.
Massive.
These Democrats and their voter fraud, and they're lining up twice and voting again, or voting for dead people, or, you know, whatever nonsense they're talking about. All of this is about voter suppression. And we talk about it every year when we get right up to the elections. when it's too late to do a damn thing about it. The time to talk about this stuff is now, and that's why I will, we will be talking about this a lot, well before we get to 2012. So they brought it up at the debate on Monday, and all five of these potential GOP chair candidates were asked about it, about voter fraud, that, by the way, doesn't really exist. Election fraud, that's a different deal, where you can tamper with the machines, you can game the system to keep people from voting. But as far as voters go, there is very little of it, as found even by George W. Bush, who put massive, unprecedented resources into rooting out quote-unquote voter fraud. He found all of, like, 18 convictions over all of the years that his DOJ was doing it. But so they asked the candidates about this. They all said the same thing. Ann Wagner from Missouri said, quote, voter fraud is a real issue out there. Saul Anouzes.
And she's the one with 16 guns and
a
Glock.
So. Yeah, that's right. Saul Anouzes from Michigan. I think voter fraud is a very serious issue for all of us, obviously. Mario Sino said, I, too, have been involved with a lot of ballot integrity and ballot security programs. Michael Steele's talked about the issue of ballot integrity. That's the code word, ballot integrity, because you know there are a lot of people out there gaming the system, and as it turns out, they're all like minority people. They're black, Hispanic, old ladies, students, all these people who happen to, what? Vote Democrat.
Right.
So they want to keep these guys from voting. They're claiming there's massive voter fraud. This has been a long game that they've been playing, and the idea here is to institute restrictions at the polling place by forcing laws that require photo ID when you go to vote.
Jim Crow 2011.
As it turns out, of course, the minorities, elderly, students, all of these people who vote Democrats, also are the ones that don't have the photo ID that would be needed to vote.
Wow.
We're talking some 30, estimated 21 million Americans don't have this type of ID that these people want to force you to have to vote. Now, this has been a long time coming. It's been going back to Jim Crow, obviously. They were, you know, trying to keep black people from exercising their franchise.
And they did.
And they did.
And they still do.
Yep. And in the modern era, then, let's go back to 1980. Paul Weyrich, who is a conservative icon, conservative movement icon, who died, I believe it was actually just last year. Until then, he would meet with conservatives every once a week. He was, you know, celebrated. Here is Paul Weyrich speaking in 1980 in Dallas to about 15,000 preachers. Okay, on the stage with him was Jerry Falwell and Ronald Reagan, and he was speaking about the idea of voting, and these words here, it's only about 30 seconds, these words are really at the bottom of the entire anti-voter, anti-democracy campaign that Republicans have been waging ever since. Listen closely to what Paul Weyrich has to say.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage in the election, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down. Yeah. To his credit, Paul Weyrich said it out loud. But that is the theme that they won't say it out loud now, but that's the theme they've been working on for the past, 30, 40 years, trying to keep people from voting. Let's move the clock forward to 2004, Ohio. Okay, you got a guy by the name of Tim Griffin, who at the time was working for the Republican National Committee, and he sends out some email to a bunch of other campaign, George W. Bush campaign workers. The email includes what he calls a caging list. Thousands of names of, as it turns out, minority voters, military voters who have been deployed overseas,
yep.
Okay? Caging lists that he's sharing with them what they're going to do. Voter caging is essentially sending out mail, direct mail to these people with a do not forward on it, and requiring them to respond. And when they don't respond, for whatever reason, you use this information to challenge them at the polling place. Tim Griffin was in charge of this caging effort in 2004 in Ohio to keep tens of thousands of folks Yeah, to keep tens of thousands of folks out of the polling place. And his emails were errantly sent. Instead of to georgewbush.org, he sent them to georgewbush.com.
The commercial site, the funny site.
Someone else owned that site and forwarded those emails to our friend Greg Pallast, who revealed Tim Griffin's plan for trying to keep people from voting in 2004, which is illegal. Well, let me just fast forward.
We're going to hear from him in a minute, right?
No, from Tim Griffin? Well, should we take the break for the news and come back and do it?
Well, that's what we're going to do.
Okay,
it is 31 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you. You're listening to Go Harrison. And now news with Mercy Malik.
Harrison. News update.
Go Harrison. News time is 31 minutes past the hour. And my, that mic is low. If you'd like to hear the news, you might want to turn it up a little bit.
What did she say? I couldn't
That's
hear what
right.
she said.
Oh. I'm Mercy Malik with your reality check. The moderate governor of Pakistan's most populous province was assassinated yesterday, reportedly by one of his own guards. FrontiersWeb.com reports that Punjab Governor Salman Taseer had recently drawn death threats for his opposition to blasphemy laws, mandating death sentences for those who insult Islam. The guard accused of murdering him was apparently particularly incensed by Taseer's pardoning late last year of a Christian woman convicted of supposedly insulting the Prophet Muhammad. The blasphemy laws in question are so vague that a man recently spent time behind bars for discarding the business card of a man whose first name was Muhammad. A senior South Asia researcher for Human Rights Watch commented, quote, Taseer showed himself to be a rare politician, willing to risk his life in espousing an unambiguous position against discrimination and abuse, end quote. And a fellow leader in Taseer's Pakistan People's Party stated, through tears, quote, he was the most courageous voice after Benazir Bhutto on the rights of women and religious minorities, end quote. Taseer is the most prominent Pakistani politician to be assassinated since Benazir Bhutto 3 years ago. To read more about this and other stories, go to frontiersweb.com. And it is 32 minutes past the hour. New WikiLeaked diplomatic cables reveal U.S. officials considered revoking a U.S. nonprofit organization's tax-exempt status on behalf of the Japanese government. Monica Medina, U.S. representative to the International Whaling Commission, discussed revoking the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's nonprofit status during a meeting with senior officials from the Fisheries Agency of Japan in November 2009. Each year between December and March, the conservation group chases Japanese whaling fleets in the Atlantic, disrupting the hunt by fouling fishing lines and throwing stink bombs at whalers. Society members insist that their acts of sabotage are interventions on behalf of international law, which prohibits commercial whale hunting. The cables show the U.S. worked with Japan to reach a deal, calling the Conservation Society's actions a, quote, irritant to international relations. 1,000 whales are slaughtered each year in Japanese hunts, which currently fall under the research exemption. Guys, your whispering is as loud as the news ringing.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead. We should share with the okay. share with the
no,
listeners.
No. Last, only once no. you tell us about the unsubstantiated information on the birds.
I may yes. soon. And finally, 33 minutes past the hour, have you donated to fundraising powerhouse Susan G. Komen for the Cure? Did you think your money was going to fund breast cancer research? Well, how would you feel to discover that your charitable donation went towards attacking other smaller charities? That's right. HuffingtonPost.com reports that Susan G. Komen for the Cure has been using donor monies to viciously sue other fundraising groups who dare to use the phrase for the cure or for a cure, as well as claiming proprietary domain over the color pink. According to Komen's financial statements, its attacks on the mostly tiny mom-and-pop charities cost the foundation almost $1 million a year, which of course comes from monies people donated in the belief that they were helping to cure cancer. Komen has reportedly gone after over 100 tiny fundraisers, such as Cupcakes for a Cure and a dog sled race called Mush for the Cure, whose founder, Susan Prom, says, quote, I think it's a shame. It's not okay. People don't give their money to the Komen Foundation, and they don't do their races and events so that Komen can squash any other fundraising efforts by individuals. That's not what it's about, end quote. Some groups have been able to defeat Komen's attacks through the help of pro bono lawyers, donating countless hours to do battle with the mega group's well-paid team of attorneys. Prom commented, quote, I used to give money to Komen all the time, but now I'm just kind of wary of them. I'm not buying Yoplait yogurt or anything that has the word Komen on it. They seem to have forgotten what charity is about, end quote. For Go Harrison on KPFK, 90.7 Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, 99.5 Ridgecrest, China Lake, I'm Mercy Malik. You can be my friend on Facebook and send me news tips for your reality check.
News update, Harrison.
Reagan. A Life in Letters is the publishing event of the year, but letters alone cannot tell the full story of America's greatest president. Introducing Reagan, A Life in Post-it Notes.
Nancy, buy more jelly beans. Oh, P.S. Red jelly beans, good. Red commies, bad.
Nowhere else could you find such a clear statement of our 40th president's values and opinions than on little yellow squares of paper stuck to the White House fridge.
Nancy, please wash my overalls. Use Tide. P.S. Not the Tide of Marxism that threatens our very way of life.
Reagan, A Life in Post-it Notes, chronicles his thoughts on politics, religion, and even sex.
Dear Nancy, the Berlin Wall has fallen. And when I get home, so will that little lace number I bought you for our anniversary. P.S. Growl.
Reagan, A Life in Post-it Notes is available at Boredom's Books. Buy your copy today and receive the bonus volume, Reagan, A Life in Grocery List.
Eggs, milk, and what else? Oh, yes. Eggs, milk.
37 minutes past the hour. Harrison with you, your new best friend. You are listening to Go Harrison on KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 Central California. You can join us anytime, of course, at Facebook. Do pop on. We'll give you updates and such. Plus, you can Twitter, same thing, keyword Go Harrison, LinkedIn, everybody else. And we will be launching the new 3.0 Go Harrison website where we're going to have breaking news, your breaking news as you post it, et cetera, videos, audio, all the rest of it, so that we have a 24-hour presence with you. And you can continue the news cycle and break and send to us what you know and what you learn and what you don't learn. And we will do whatever we can to ferret out fact from fiction. But much of it is the honor system and open sourced. That is the beautiful thing about today's technology. We've got Brad Friedman with us. It is Muckraking Wednesdays. And Brad, it is time for us to launch into filibuster, which I love the word because it we think etymologically it comes from a pirate word, meaning freebooter or some form of piracy, which in fact it is meant to do, is to steal time on the floor to the point where sort of there's gridlock and nothing happens. And let's look at some updates, because yesterday we visited about changing the filibuster rules and we had some action plans, but now we learn that the first day of Congress is actually happening more than on just the first day, because the first day is like in the second week too somehow magically. And what's going on?
Yeah, well, indeed. And well, actually, we're going to find out what's going on with David Dayan shortly from Fire Dog Lake. We're going to talk about that and what this new proposal, because we now have an official proposal from the Democrats, what it means. I do need to finish up, though, because we ran out of time there at the bottom of the hour, and I'll point you over to bradblog.com for the full story. But I do need to give you a heads up on this story with Tim Griffin. We were talking before the break about the fact that the Republicans for decades now on end have been trying to keep people from voting, and that Tim Griffin, when he was with the RNC, Karl Rove's protege back in 2004, how he was caught being involved with this voter caging in 2004 back in Ohio. And I'm not just bringing this out to rehash it, because Tim Griffin now comes into play again. But before he does, he was actually, since he was such a good pal with Karl Rove, he was appointed as one of the U.S. attorneys in Arkansas that later became known as the U.S. Attorney Purge. You recall where they got rid of these Republicans, Bush got rid of the Republicans who were good Republican U.S. attorneys, but some of them weren't prosecuting voter fraud because it didn't exist, but they weren't making a good enough show of it, so they wanted to get rid of them. David Iglesias down in New Mexico, for example. Another U.S. attorney they got rid of was Bud Cummins up in Arkansas. By everybody's description, he was a good guy, actually a moderate guy, but the reason they got rid of him was so they could put Tim Griffin into the U.S. attorney job in Arkansas, in hopes of padding his resume. A little favor to Karl Rove, since he did such a swell job with the vote caging and everything else, okay? When this came out, and the entire U.S. attorney purge and this phony voter fraud and everything else, Tim Griffin was forced to resign in shame, in disgrace. up there in Arkansas. He had a teary farewell speech, and at the time, all of this voter caging stuff came out. It came out in hearings in Congress that he was involved in this, that he wasn't telling anybody that he was involved in this. He was acting like he wasn't, even though we have emails with his name on it, with subject line, voter caging. He still denied it. And I had the clip. I'm not going to play the clip because I want to get to David Dayan. You can hear it over at bradblog.com. But the reason all of this comes up is because after his disgrace in 2007, when he had to leave the U.S. Attorney's office, said his political career was over. He cried at this thing, as AP put it. Very sad. He's out of politics forever. Guess what?
What?
Last November, he ran for office. For Congress in Arkansas's 2nd District. And guess what? Tim Griffin won. And guess what? The Republicans have now made Tim Griffin part of the leadership in Congress. He is a deputy whip. And so congrats, Tim. And as well, he has now seated this vote cager who was never held accountable by Democrats when they had the chance. This vote cager, Tim Griffin, now sits on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee.
What a perfect
fit. That's
fit.
Appropriate for freshmen, isn't it?
Ain't it, though? Yes, he gets a plum position on the House Judiciary Committee. So I want everybody to keep their eye out for the new House Judiciary Committee hearings. Keep your eye out for Tim Griffin when you see him talking. Know that this is a man who was willing to defy the law to keep legal voters from voting. And, well, for the next couple of years, we'll see if we can bring some accountability to our friend Tim Griffin. This is the incoming freshman class. The criminals are back. And, of course, we can blame the Democrats because, really, they didn't insist on any accountability in those 2 years that they could have. So,
well, an impeachment was off the table.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what they did.
Thanks, God. And yeah. We didn't show up to vote in the midterms, too. So.
All right, so I just want to put that out there. I suspect we'll be talking more about Tim Griffin in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. But you got a vote cager sitting right there in Congress in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee.
Nice.
Yeah, lovely. You can get more at bradblog.com. But I want to go to David Doyen from Fire Dog Lake. From his
no relation
his,
to Desi.
To, no, did I say Doyen?
Yes.
I meant David Dayan.
Okay.
You see, there is a confusion.
Well.
Not Desi Doyen.
You must love your girlfriend.
I do love her.
You should.
I do. She is swell. But I also love David Dayan in a different way. He joins us from Fire Dog
in the
Lake.
In a prison way.
His website is news.firedoglake.com. And he's been following reform here that is proposed for the filibuster rule in the Senate, today being the first day of the 112th Congress. And somehow or another, this first day is going to stretch 3 weeks or something. David hopefully can explain it. Hey, David, welcome to the KPFK.
Well, it was a heck of an interesting introduction.
Yes.
So, thank you.
Well, now, I do love you. Now, David, if you could explain, before we get into the details of this proposed filibuster reform, can you explain to me, they're able to change the rules of the Senate only on the first day of the Senate. Isn't this the first day of the 112th Senate?
Yes. And there's some debate as to whether they can change the rules whenever the heck they want to or in the first legislative day. But in the first legislative day, certainly, if you look at the Constitution, Article 1, Section 5, you see it says each House of Congress shall determine its own rules.
Okay.
And that kind of trumps any rule that the Senate has as a continuing body, whereby they would be able to filibuster changes to the rules or whatever is currently in the rules. It says on the first day, you know, mm-hmm. at the beginning of a new Congress, the Senate can and the House can determine their own rules.
So they can determine their own rules and is not subject to the filibuster. All they need is a majority vote and a Democrat.
Because at that time when they're determining their own rules, yeah. they're really not operating under any rules.
Okay.
As the theory goes.
So how is
now,
this? Yeah.
How can this be spread out?
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between the definition of a calendar day and the definition of a legislative day. So what's probably going to happen here, and the reason this works is that the House or the Senate, after today, is going to go on a 2-week vacation.
Right.
So they're going to call, instead of adjourning, they're going to call a recess. And the reason they're going to call a recess is it allows them to return on what amounts to the same legislative day.
Now, when they call this recess, are they doing it for this specific reason so that they can come back on January 24th now and pass these new rules? Is that specifically why they're not adjourning?
Specifically why they're doing a recess rather than an adjournment, to give more time to see how this transpires and to come up, you know, with some resolution of this pending business, which is the resolution to change the rules, which was introduced by Senator Tom Udall today.
Now, would they normally do this, by the way, or is this?
They've done it in the past.
Yeah.
There's a lot of precedent for this.
Okay.
Back in, I believe, 1980, Senator Robert Byrd, the first legislative day lasted until June.
Okay, really?
So this has happened before. It's really not entirely out of the ordinary. What it says to me is that the consensus isn't quite there yet within the Democratic caucus, and they need a couple weeks to arrive at a consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the couple weeks also gives Harry Reid time to negotiate with Republicans on what they think they can get out of them. And if not, he has the backup of the constitutional option, which is the idea that the Senate can change its own rules at the beginning of the session by majority vote, and it's a complicated process, but eventually you would get a majority vote up or down on the rule.
I got you. Okay, so this first day could go on as long as they want it to go on.
As long as they want to, as they just recess at the end of the day rather than adjourn.
I got you. Okay, now Harry Reid said on the floor of the House today, he made some remarks, and he talked about that, quote, in the entire 19th century, the Senate saw fewer than 12. A dozen filibusters, and now we see that many in a single month. So obviously the filibuster has become a problem. Certainly if you're a Democrat, it's a problem. And the question is, what do they do to change the rules, if anything, for filibuster? And Senators Tom Harkin, Tom Udall, and Jeff Merkley put out a proposal today, and it's a five-point proposal. It actually seems pretty simple, but I'm going to have you, David, I'm going to go through these 5 points very quickly and see if you can explain to me what they actually mean. We may have to take a break for traffic in the middle of some of these points, but let's see if we can hit a couple of them here very quickly. Okay, the first point, they talk about a clear path to debate. Eliminate the filibuster on motions to proceed. What does that mean exactly?
Well, as it exists right now, you can filibuster a variety of things on a single piece of legislation. So when the majority leader wants to just bring a bill to the floor, they have to pass what is called a motion to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
And you can filibuster that motion to proceed. Now think about what this means. This means you refuse to end debate on the motion to begin debate.
Right?
That's literally what that means.
Well, is that different from cloture, from voting for cloture?
You have to do a cloture vote on the motion to proceed, and then you have to vote on the motion to proceed. This is why the filibuster has become such a great device for obstructionists, is because it takes so much time to do all this stuff. You know, to let a cloture motion ripen takes 2 days. After you pass a cloture motion, there's 30 hours of post-cloture time. And basically, even a non-controversial piece of legislation could take up to 2 weeks on the Senate floor.
So
this is why the body has completely slowed down. If you eliminate the motion to the filibuster of the motion to proceed, you have immediately cut in half the time of a piece of legislation that may be non-controversial to get to the floor. You can still filibuster it at the end. Once it's on the floor, mm-hmm. the cloture motion you have to do to end debate. But you can't filibuster the motion to proceed. That's the point of that.
And they were, up till now, they were able to filibuster actually pretty much every single type of vote. And so now they'll still be able to filibuster, just not quite as, not each and every step of the way. All right, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I would say to that is it just speeds up time. I mean, so much of this is about the Senate calendar. And there's so much legislation to be passed. And since it operates under unanimous consent, any one senator can essentially gum up the works and drag things out for weeks and weeks.
Okay.
So what this does, and what also the post-closure time on nominations, so reducing that, does is speed up time on things that aren't controversial. Just let's get it done and move on to other business.
All right, we're going to take a break for traffic in a second, but one more here very quickly, David Dayan, before we go to break. Eliminate the secret holds. We've heard about this where suddenly someone, some senator, anonymously can hold up pretty much any damn thing they want in the Senate. This will eliminate their ability to do that?
Well, it'll eliminate their ability to do it anonymously. I don't see too much in the secret holds thing, and so, of course, it's probably the most likely thing to get actually done in final analysis.
Right.
It just makes it, you know, not anonymous. You have to own if you're putting a hold on a piece of legislation or on a nominee.
Well, I think there may be more.
I mean, if you couldn't do it anonymously, you can still do it anyway, and I don't see Jim DeMint or Tom Coburn being very embarrassed about putting a hold on whatever the heck they want.
Well, that's a good point. But I still think it may make some of them think twice before they want to come out and be the guy who says...
Any transparency is good, I think, in this sense. And so I don't think it's a bad thing. I just don't think it will change a lot.
Gotcha. David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake. Stay put. We're going to do a quick check of traffic here. We'll come back and hit these other 3 points on filibuster reform with David Dayan. David Dayan from Fire Dog Lake. Stay with us.
It is 52 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Go Harrison on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara 93.7, in San Diego 99.5, in Crystal, meth. And now traffic with Jeff Thomas.
Harrison. Completely unsponsored, common sense commuter traffic.
52 minutes past the hour. This is your very speedy Go Harrison live and local traffic report on KPFK. There's an accident on the 405 North at Wilshire Boulevard. Traffic slows at about Centinela and stays busy through the Sepulveda Pass. The 10 East is busy coming out of Santa Monica and remains slow through La Brea Avenue. And in Monterey Park, the 10 East, there's a hit-and-run accident, but it's the westbound side that's showing slowing. From New Avenue back to the 605. For Harrison, I'm Jeffrey Thomas on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara.
It is 53 minutes past the hour. Brad Friedman in with us. Of course, this is our Muckraking Wednesdays, our Investigative Wednesdays, along with Mercy Malik, our news directress, and Geoff with a G, and D'Angelo with an apostrophe after the D. We're listening to and learning about filibuster, about the alleged new rules, and finding out that you can more or less do more or less the same thing if you stand a little bit over here and wear this kind of hat. But nothing significant seems to be changing. But at least there's some motion.
Well, it may be significant. We'll find out. And, of course, these are still proposed. So they could be stronger. They could not happen at all. To that end, David Dayan, we never have enough time, but we're going to try to rush through these three more points that has been... in the Senate rules reform proposal from Senators Harkin, Udall, and Merkley. Speaking with David Dayan from FireDogLake.com. Okay, David, the right to amend guarantees consideration of amendments for both majority and minority. I think this one's pretty simple, but give us the quick explanation.
Right. This is essentially a rebuttal to what the Republicans are saying is the problem with changing the rules. They're saying, hey, we're not the ones that are being obstructionists. You're not letting us get amendments on this stuff. All we want to do is amend this legislation, and as long as we're able to do that, you'll have no problem with the Senate.
And so they're saying that
what the Democrats did is they said, all right, well, here, instead of allowing the majority leader the ability to close down amendments, we will guarantee you germane amendments, amendments that actually relate to the legislation at hand, all the time. So, you know, essentially, you want the minority to have the ability to amend, the ability to debate, not the ability to grind the Senate to a halt. And so there's an ability, sort of give and take here, to give the minority a little bit more protection.
They're allowed to make these amendments as long as they're germane. So we can't bring in these Viagra pornography amendments they try to bring into every bill. All right, two more here quickly. Expedite nominate. I'm going to skip the. I'm going to go to the last one for now. Expedite nominations. Reduce post cloture time. This essentially changes the post after a filibuster has been ended. They have 30 hours of debate usually, even on nominations. Now they'll have just 2 hours?
On nominations. The stuff that's about speeding up time on the floor is significant, I would argue, because a lot of times what happens is the Senate just runs out of time. There are bills that are not even controversial, things just getting the business of the nation done, and they run out of time because the minority chooses to obstruct and delay and cause, you know, weeks for just simple things to get done.
All right, and speaking,
get these things through, then you know, you have the ability to, on big legislation, make a big fight, and that's what's coming up next.
All right, and so what we're talking about is not changing the vote. It'll still take 60 to shut down a filibuster. However, this last point here is the talking filibuster. It ensures real debate, the proponents say. How will this work in 30 seconds or less?
Here's how it works.
So yeah, sorry.
I'll do it. If you have a cloture vote, 41 people object. Instead of that being the end, they voted to not end debate. Okay, they have to debate now. They have to go to the floor. They have to hold the floor. If they lose the floor at any time, if they stop debating, then cloture is automatically invoked.
And so they have to keep, yeah.
It forces them to keep the floor for as long as they want to, or the majority leader decides to move to some other legislation. It forces them to keep the floor. It makes it harder on them to actually filibuster, and it makes it easy on them to stop, because if they just stop, cloture is invoked.
So we may actually see something that looks like a real filibuster with these people talking. Yeah, that would be a nice change of pace in and of itself. We'll see if any of these rules proposed in this actually happen as the first day of Congress moves forward for the next 2 weeks. David Dayan from news.firedoglake. Thank you, brother. Always great to talk to you. Thanks for keeping us up to date. We'll talk to you in the future.
Thank you, Brad Friedman, so much. Thank you, Mercy Malik. Thank you, GF with a G. Thank you, D'Angelo with a D and an apostrophe. Harrison with you, your new best friend. Looking forward to see you next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday from 3 to 4 Pacific time. Don't forget, you can visit us anytime at GoHarrison.com, and have a wonderful new year.
Just breathe. Just believe.
You've been listening to The Harrison Show right here on KPFK. And up next is the 4 o'clock report with host John Wehner, so please stay with us. Peace.